More than 30 years ago, political analyst Kevin Phillips wrote a book called The Emerging Republican Majority. Although Richard Nixon, a Republican, was president, Democrats controlled both houses of Congress. Phillips argued that a new Republican majority would emerge out of the disillusionment with big government. A Republican majority did emerge in 1980 with the Reagan Revolution, 11 years after the book was written. Now John Judis and Rui Teixeira have written The Emerging Democratic Majority, and it's being published during a time when many would say Republicans are ascendant. The book's basic thesis is that the country is shifting in ways that are not obvious, and that may lead several years or a decade from now to bringing the Democrats to power. John Judis and Rui Teixeira both join me here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to All Things Considered.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
I would say the most fascinating point in your book for me was the whole notion that professionals, what we think of as professionals, has shifted, that the number of professionals has grown dramatically, that they are different from managers, and that their allegiances are shifting. Talk about that.
Well,
John.
If you look at the 1950s and your typical professional, your lawyer who had his own office, doctor who had his own office, these were people who had a kind of guild mentality. They had a satisfaction that they had done it themselves. They didn't need government. They didn't need anybody else's help. And they were the most Republican of American occupational groups. Since then, professionals have grown. They're now about 15, 16% of the workforce, and their role has changed in America. America has become a post-industrial society. We make ideas and we make services, and professionals work now within great institutions, and their work is subject to that. They are beginning to feel the same kind of pressures that blue-collar and lower-level white-collar workers felt. And as a result, they're seeing their role differently, and they're seeing their relationship to the market and to business differently. And they're becoming much more liberal, especially on issues about what comes first, social priorities or private market priorities, those kind of issues. And you see it in terms of the environment. You see it in terms of their support for consumer protection, a whole range of issues, and now pretty much tend to be Democratic rather than Republican in their sympathies.
One of the things that you say in the book is that we tend to think of cities, suburbs, and rural areas, and you argue, you coined this phrase, ideopolis, which I guess comes from the Greek polis, and you say that it's different, that you can't look at geography the way you once did. Explain.
Yeah, well, these ideopolises, these post-industrial metropolitan areas where the lines between city and suburbs have become blurred, and you get many of the same businesses and, you know, bookstores and coffee shops and service industries kind of all over this large metropolitan area.
So this is like the Research Triangle in
North Carolina. Carolina, the area around Austin, Texas, really. I mean, the D.C. metro area and its northern Virginia and Maryland suburbs, the New York area. And what happens in these ideopolises is you have a new culture emerging that at some extent is based around these professionals who loom large in these areas typically. And these coalitions emerge that include minorities, they include women, they include even a large section of sort of blue-collar Democrats, they all tend to share a perception of the government as playing a role in mitigating the excesses of the market, a role in protecting the environment, providing social support. You look at these geographical areas, which are the cutting edge of technical and industrial change in the United States, and they're all areas, almost all, where the Democrats are now developing an advantage. In fact, if you compare the Reagan election of 1980 to the 2000 election, almost all of the change toward the Democrats, the shift toward the Democrats in the country since then, has been concentrated in these ideopolises, in these post-industrial areas. So a new culture in politics has emerged there that fundamentally favors the Democrats and in a way captures where we're going as a country.
Now, there is a counter-argument to this, and you mention it. It's an argument that's been made by Karl Rove, by Michael Barone. And there is, you could argue, a huge population that lives in what they wouldn't call ideopolises. They would call them exurbs, right? Mm-hmm. And they're neither suburban, they're urban. And they would argue that a lot of these growing communities, huge growing communities, are communities where people who live there are not as close to their families because sometimes they've had to move away, that their allegiances are shifting in regard to schools, sport leagues, churches, that many of these people are people who maybe have a family income of $50,000 a year, and that these people are natural Republicans.
Well, the basic problem with that thesis is that the places they're talking about aren't very big. There's not that many people there. They tend to be on the fringe areas of these metropolitan, these big metropolitan areas, many of which as really would qualify as being ideopolises. As these fringe areas get bigger and become denser, they actually become more democratic. Call it the ideopolis effect, if you will. So not only do these areas, these fringe areas, these edge counties become more democratic as they grow, but they're not big enough typically to affect the larger politics of the area. That's just the logic of it, the mathematics of it, if you will. So maybe for a time, a blessed time for Republicans as these sparsely settled exurbs develop, yes, they are. They do tend to be quite Republican, partly because of the people who tend to gather there, some emigres from rural areas, some more conservative people coming from the inner suburbs. But as they develop, they themselves become subject to a lot of the same kind of changes that we've talked about in the book.
But they do argue, certainly, that religious observance, for example, has increased.
Yeah, the problem with the contention that Republicans benefit from an increase in religious observance is there hasn't been any. This is just wrong. The biggest change in how much people go to church and observe and are involved with religion in the United States since the early 70s is that many more people don't do it. We've gone from about 18% of the population in the early 70s, basically never or rarely attending church, to about 30% today. That's far and away the largest exchange in change in religious observance in the United States. And how do these people vote? They vote Democratic. Just as we know that people who are highly observant tend to vote Republican, the other side of it is true as well, that people who are not observant, who are sort of secular, typically vote very heavily Democratic. So actually, this part of the Republican case just doesn't hold water. We are becoming, whether we like it or not, a less observant, not more observant society.
Rui Teixeira and John Judas are the authors of The Emerging Democratic Majority. Thanks so much for being with us.
Delighted.
It was fun.